This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
That was the owner of the Kansas City Royals, John Sherman, having a press conference. Welcome in. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I would give you a proper introduction. I guess we'll get to that coming up in just a bit. Let's react to what we heard from the Royals. I would say there were two main talking points. I know that some of you want us to put the stadium conversation in the cupboard and only open the cupboard when they've made a decision. That's not how this is going to be covered. This is one of the biggest decisions from a civic standpoint in our lifetime. Where is the next stadium going to be? I was born when the stadium was there. I've never had these conversations before. There are a lot of you that are in the exact same circle that I'm in. So this is all a very, very new conversation for a lot of people, and I don't think that we are coming anywhere close to the conclusion of it. There was a baseball point from what we just heard from John Sherman. There was a stadium point from what we heard from John Sherman. He did not sound as emphatic about downtown baseball in that press conference as he has before. Now, maybe this is me thinking back to his original press conference, and there certainly has been a lot of things that have happened since then. But he was very, very emphatic that his vision included downtown baseball. Now, maybe they are still in negotiations. There was a report earlier today where the mayor of Kansas City says that they are prepared to give the Royals $1 billion to help fund a new stadium and stadium project, and they don't need a vote to get it passed. $1 billion is a lot of money to build a baseball stadium and will pay for a large portion of what they are trying to do. But he did not sound as emphatic about downtown baseball. He was asked it very specifically from Sam McDowell of the Kansas City Star, who asked to me the biggest question. Hey, you guys this entire time have maintained that you want to be in downtown Kansas City, Missouri. Is that still the case? He did not sound committed about that. Not to say they are not having those conversations, but he certainly didn't lock them into our plan is to be in Washington Square, Washington Park, or anywhere surrounding it. I think that was a very interesting part of it. He talked about the public-private partnership of it. We are going to help pay for some of the stadium. I know that we hate giving billionaires money, and that's not where we think our tax dollars should go. If you live in Kansas or Missouri, some of your tax dollars is going to help pay for the baseball stadium. That is just the way that business works in America. I also thought what he said about the baseball team was very interesting. He talked about how they tried to build their roster and how they tried to attack it this offseason. And I do think that the Royals tried to make a play to help solidify the middle of their lineup. We talked about this yesterday. You got Bobby Witt Jr. in the middle of your lineup. You got Vinny Pasquantino, and you're looking for that third bat. Could that bat be MJ Melendez? We'll see as the season progresses. Could that be Kyle Isbell? We'll see as the season progresses. But I do think the Royals made a very serious play to try to get that impact bat in the middle of the lineup. And I think they found out, hey, it's a supply and demand. Everybody's looking for that. Everybody is looking for a certified run producer in the middle of their lineup. It costs a lot. I think the Royals put some feelers out there, tried to get a gauge of what it was going to cost to fill that position. They realized that it was too rich for their blood. They backed away from the table, and they started to focus their resources elsewhere. They went out and got Jonathan India. They went out and tried to help solidify their bullpen. So impact bats in the middle of their lineup is still going to be a question, but I do think the Royals tried to be aggressive in trying to find that bat in the middle of the lineup, and I just don't think the business and the finances ended up working for the Kansas City Royals. I think today is a great day if you are a Royals fan. You are going into it with the same level of uncertainty about the baseball stadium, but I'm willing to put that aside for right now. They are 25 hours away from starting a season. One of their most anticipated seasons, if not their most anticipated season since winning the World Series a decade ago. People are hopeful about this baseball team. People are optimistic about this team. Opening day is sold out for tomorrow. The weather should hold up and be a great day. It is the hope and optimism of spring. The Royals are 0-0, and not just fake hope and fake optimism. Based on what you saw last year, based on some of the offseason moves, based on what they accomplished last season, you have legitimate reason to go into this year excited about the Royals and with the hope and belief that they can be a really good baseball team. Coming up on the other side, Rob, let's keep the baseball conversation going. We will give you a random lineup as we get ready for opening day. We'll have a formal introduction of the show. And why don't we go through what I think the Royals' checklist is for the 2025 season? We'll do that next. Keep it right here. So drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We are about 25 hours away from opening day. Carrington is here. Rob is here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. We just heard from the owner of the Kansas City Royals, John Sherman, as he met with the media to talk about the future of the Truman Sports Complex and also get you ready for this year's baseball season. Rob, last thought that I have about what we just heard from John Sherman, stadium related, and then we'll move on and we'll talk about the baseball team as they are getting ready for opening day. I wrote this down. It is obvious that the Royals don't think that the Truman Sports Complex is viable anymore, but I think the Royals have expressed that they want a full-fledged entertainment district around their baseball stadium. You just heard what John Sherman said. They are not thinking just about the 81 home games. They want whatever stadium that they build or where it goes, they want it to be a 365. You come down there to eat. You come down there to drink. You come down there to shop. You come down there to stay at one of their hotels if you're coming in town for a concert. They see what they are building and planning for much larger than just a baseball stadium. They see it as an entertainment district centered around a baseball stadium. When the Chiefs gave us their plans on what they want their next football stadium to be, they didn't really seem to have much of an interest of some of the other things that you and I thought they were going to be into. That was a big thing that I always thought the Chiefs wanted. I always thought the Chiefs wanted their Chiefs Kingdom with those same shops and bars and restaurants and all of those things. That's not what we got. Now, that was with the proposed plan before with the renovation, not starting completely over. If the Chiefs' plan is to have that entertainment district, I don't know how they get that in the state of Missouri. We all have been out to the Truman Sports Complex. They've had enough time to put things around it. They've never put anything around it. They had their business guy, Mark Donovan, last year say that they have done the studies. They have done the research. They don't see it as a viable place to put an entertainment district out there. If the Chiefs want an entertainment district, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for them to stay in Missouri. Because if you don't think that the best place is where you already are, the Chiefs are not moving to Lee's Summit. The Chiefs are not moving to Blue Springs where you have the space and maybe you create that entertainment district around it. The place where they would either go is out by the Legends, where there already is the entertainment district. Sure, we'll put some of our own stuff out there, but we want you to come out here. We want you to do all those things. So I think that's a very important thing to note in how the Royals are approaching this thing and how I think the Chiefs are approaching this. The Chiefs are approaching this where, is it land that you want? Is it access to the highway? Is it space? Because the Royals, I think, have pretty clearly emphasized they want an entertainment district. They want bars and shops and retail space. I don't know specifically if that's what the Chiefs have communicated what their goals are. Obviously, we'll continue to track this thing, but I did think that was a pretty interesting thing that we heard earlier today from the owner of the Kansas City Royals. All right, let's talk about the baseball, and let's talk about this team as they are getting ready for opening day. I think the Royals have three very clear objectives for this upcoming season. Number one is win 85 games. If you go in my lifetime or Rob's lifetime, they don't have a lot of seasons in which they've won 85 games. They had one last season in which they won 86, and 86 wins got them to the playoffs. They won 85 or more games in 2015. That got them to the World Series. They did the same thing in 2014, same thing in 2013. If you go back in the history, not even in 2003, and you know I love the 2003 Royals, they only won 83 games that season. You got to go pretty far back, not even in 93, for this team to simply win 85 games. It was 1989 before the 13 season in which this organization won 85 or more games. You don't make the playoffs in 2025 if you win 84. You don't make it if you win 83 games. You just heard John Sherman say they needed 86 wins last year. That got them the tiebreaker over the Seattle Mariners, and that was the difference in making or missing the postseason. The goal is very simple. You have to win at least 85. You got to think about 85 wins the same way that we think in the NFL, that you at least got to win 9. And 9 might put you in danger of missing the playoffs, but that at least has to be the floor and baseline. You got to win at least 9 games to seriously consider if you got a shot to making it. And then if you win 10 games, you'll probably make the postseason. 11, you are definitely making the postseason in the National Football League. If you win 85 games, that gives you the floor. Then it goes up from there. You win 87, 88, 89. You probably have one of those spots in. So, Rob, very, very clearly to me, objective number one, and Sherman has talked about, get into the dance. And as many times as you get into the tournament, you obviously give yourself more and more chances to hit and potentially go on a run. Then objective number one, goal number one is you got to win at least 85 games for the playoffs to be a realistic goal for you as an organization.
I mean, he said it at Dayton Moore's, I guess, resignation, firing, whatever you want to say, press conference. Dayton always talks about, you know, what, you know, World Championship Baseball looks like. I just want to see playoff baseball. That is the goal, it seems like, since he said that, every single season in Kansas City. He achieved it last year. Was it, you know, a roaring success? No, they went 0-2 at home. But you saw playoff baseball in Kansas City again. You saw a pennant push at the end of the season. You saw the race for a wild card at the end of the season. That is absolutely now part of the basement. The Royals don't need to revert back. You mentioned the 0-3 Royals. We all love the 0-3 Royals. The 0-4 Royals, not only did they go in reverse, they went in super reverse. That 0-4 team was dreadful. The new basement, the new lowest hurdle to clear is, hey, get back in the dance. If that's a wild card at 84 games, cool. If that's a division championship at 95 games, cool. But you have now set out, you said it when you ran Dayton Moore out of town, that you want to see playoff baseball in Kansas City. You've done it. Keep doing it. That is the absolute basement of expectations for this team, is to get back to the playoffs and do it however path it seems necessary.
I'm also looking at times that the Royals have won their division. Did you know that the Royals, they've won their division 7 times in our life? 7 times. They won the division in 85. Then the next time they won their division was in 2015. They won it 7 times over the history of their organization. Man, winning the division would be a really nice step for this team. I was following some of the gambling websites earlier today and social media accounts that kind of track data and information. Do you know that the most popular team bet to miss the playoffs is the Cleveland Guardians? Right now, in terms of money coming in terms of gambling slips, tickets, the most popular bet right now for a team to miss the playoffs is the team that won the Royals division. That means that people are telling you, the gamblers are telling you, that they believe that this division is wide open. Now, some people think that the Tigers are going to win this division. The Tigers were certainly playing better baseball than the Royals in the final 5-6 weeks of the season. The Tigers were one of the hottest teams in baseball heading into the postseason and had a chance, you felt like, to make a run to the World Series. So I'm just looking at the division and how people perceive it and where we could potentially be. The public feels like that seat is up for grabs and that Cleveland doesn't have a strong hold on it. Well, Cleveland is obviously still in the mix. They can still win this division. Where do people feel about Minnesota? How do people feel about Kansas City? Where are they out on the Detroit Tigers? Once again, I don't think this is going to be a division where you have to win 95 games to win the division. You probably have to get somewhere between 88 and 92. I made this point yesterday to Ryan Lefevre. There's 2 jumps that you got to take in sports. You got to take the first jump, which is what the Royals did. They went from a bad team to a good team. That takes a lot of work. You got to do a lot of legwork and a lot of foundation building to go from where the Royals were, where they were legitimately one of the 3 or 5 worst teams in baseball, to making the playoffs the next year and winning a postseason series. Now that you are here and you won 86 games, how do you take those 86 games and how do you get 4 to 5 games better and win 89 and win 90 games? Because the teams that win 90 games have a chance to make serious noise in the postseason. They got a chance to potentially go on that run that John Sherman is talking about. It's the same philosophy, Rob, that you and I have about the NCAA tournament. Seeding obviously matters, but you know how you advance in the tournament? first you got to make the tournament. And if you keep making the tournament enough as a 2 and a 3 seed, eventually luck is just in your favor in the single elimination tournament. Yes, there's not a lot of 86 win teams that win the World Series. There's a lot of 91 win teams that win it, a lot of 92 win teams that win it. So right now the Royals have done half of the legwork. You have got from a bottom basement team to a contending team in Major League Baseball. How do you turn that into going from a contending team to a legitimate contender and a team that can win the American League Central? You've only won the Central one time. That was in 2015. Besides that, you were in the American League West back when they did the divisions very, very differently. How do you take that next step to get to that point where you can be what the Tigers were considered last year? You can be what Houston was last season. You can be one of those teams that people think can really, really do something.
We talked about this a lot with the NCAA tournament. We use Missouri as the example. Going to the tournament's great, and Royals fans should continue, like I said earlier, to expect to go to the tournament. Baseball has a lot of teams in the playoffs. It's not as bad as the NBA or the NFL as far as, but that it's not some exclusive club. Royals fans should expect to be a playoff team, but you usually don't win the World Series from a playoff spot. You know how you win the World Series? You get home games in the first round. You know how you get home games in the first round? Winning your division.
For sure.
So for that Missouri analogy, hey, Missouri, that you had a good season, you're a 6th seed, and that's worthy of celebrating. You were disappointed, but you probably weren't going to win the national title because 6th seeds don't win the national title.
But now, next season, you got to figure out a way to go from a 6th seed to a 3 seed.
That is what the Royals need to do this year. They need to find a way to go from the team that played on the road in the best of 3 wild card series and exceed expectations by winning that series. You now have to find a way to be what the Guardians were last year. You hosted that series. You got to play home games. You got to sit stay off your feet, and you got to watch the Tigers take on the Astros, and you got to figure it out from there. That's the next step the Royals need to take. I'm not going to disparage the team if they keep being, for a Mizzou analogy, a 6th seed in the tournament. Making the tournament's a big deal, but eventually to win that tournament, you have to take that next step. Winning the Central for the Royals is that next step, and based on pure geography, it is not that crazy to think because their division is very attainable. You mentioned the Guardians came back this year. The Tigers kind of sat pat. I think they have a lot of talent, but they didn't really add big. The Royals made the biggest move of anyone in the division by adding Jonathan India. Like, you have a real chance in the AL Central and now host games at Kauffman next year for the playoffs.
I want to play some of the John Sherman cuts in case you missed it. The owner of the Kansas City Royals met with the media earlier today to talk about the on and off the field news with the Kansas City Royals. Here John Sherman is talking about this organization's quest for a bat, and they ultimately end up deciding to strengthen the bullpen.
Particularly that quest for a bat, middle of the order bat. Yeah, certainly that was one of the things that we felt would really improve our team, and I think it's been written about. We gave it the old college try here. We went after a couple of people, and I think we expanded the view of investment when we thought about that. But when we didn't get that, I think if you think about, we got a lot of, you know, one of the things JJ's been great about, he's brought some people in around him. Roster construction, I think, is really a strength of JJ's. How do you put together a team capable of, you know, getting to the postseason and then ultimately advancing in the postseason? If you think about our team, the back of the bullpen was really the best way that we could add, you know, short of a really, you know, a big bat in the middle of the order, it was really adding to the back of the bullpen. So he shifted gears, and that's when we signed Carlos Estevez.
Looking at the Royals last season, the Royals had 3 proven run producers. Bobby Witt Jr. had 109 RBIs last season. Salvador Perez had 104. The fact that Salvador Perez, at 34 years old, with the amount of baseball that he has played, was a guy who, at 34 years old, hit 27 home runs, 104 RBIs, had a .330 on-base percentage, and slugged .786, is just absolutely remarkable. Remarkable. Now, we have the conversation about Father Time, and for some reason, we have avoided Salvador Perez in this conversation. At 34 years old, he is still putting up tremendous numbers. If this team is going to replicate what they did last season, they need another solid year from Salvador Perez somewhere in this ballpark. Vinny Pasquantino last season had 19 home runs and 97 RBIs. He obviously had the unfortunate very poor timed injury last year at the end of the season as he was really starting to get hot. This lineup was starting to get hot. And then after that, Rob, there is a big gap between Vinny and who was fourth. Vinny had 97 RBIs last season. Mikel Garcia had 58. Hunter Renfroe had 52. Michael Massey had 45. And then MJ Melendez. Very simple. You need MJ Melendez to turn into your clear fourth option when it comes to run production. He can't be a guy that plays in 135 games, gives you 450 plate appearances, and has 44 RBIs next year. Like, you're counting on him to be a guy that can potentially get you 60, 70 RBIs. And if you can see that kind of jump from whether it's Kyle Isbell, Hunter Renfroe, Mikel Garcia, MJ Melendez. If you can see that kind of jump from those three or four individuals, you got a chance to really take a step forward as an offense and kind of hit the ground running just a little bit. But when you look at their team from last season, it makes sense why the Royals were trying to find that bat in the middle of their lineup to kind of round it out a little bit. They need one other player in their offense aside from those top three guys that we talked about. They need one of the others. They need one of their surrounding cast supporting actors, so to speak. They need them to step up and be lead dogs coming up this season.
Or, and I don't disagree with you, is it possible that Jonathan India is what we think Jonathan India is, and suddenly there's more opportunities for those first three guys? Like, as great as Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby were last year, and they were sensational, most of the season the Royals played without a leadoff hitter. They basically elected to not have one. Mikel Garcia was a leadoff hitter for a while. That didn't work. They then had a rotation of guys at the top of the order. None of it seemed to work. At the end of the season, they brought in 37-year-old Tommy Pham. He immediately became the leadoff hitter, which was working to a level, I guess. It was better than it had been. I'm not trying to skirt and say that, you know, Melendez or Mikel or one of those guys needs to be a bigger run producer. But is it possible part of the Royals' plan is, hey, we got three great run producers. Imagine if we had more base runners. Because Jonathan India might make it easier for those guys to drive in runs. And they were driving in runs at a high level last year. And it was basically, that was the offense. I wonder if that's part of the thought process on Jonathan India is, those guys are going to drive in the runs. Let's give them more opportunities.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. I guess I would counter with, I think as the Royals, you need to anticipate putting yourself in a position that if something goes wrong, you're fine. I mean, last year, Salvador Perez played in 158 games. Bobby Wood Jr. played in 161 games. So you had two guys last year that were pretty constant and played every single day, so you knew what kind of production you were going to get from them. I don't think you knew what kind of production you were going to get from basically anybody else consistently in your lineup. So you're right about Jonathan India and him setting the table and him getting on base and allowing your guys to be run producers. I'm just looking at the rest of their team where are you able to ride out a potential slump from Vinny Pasquantino or an injury that sits him down for 3 weeks like happened at the end of the season? Because I think it was pretty clear last year when the Royals lost Vinny and you removed him from the lineup, the Royals just had no possible answer. You're not going to do a lot of damage with just two guys in your lineup, and that's basically what they had in the final month of the season. They had Bobby Witt Jr., they had Salvador Perez, and they were trying to piecemeal it together with those two in pitching, and ultimately, you run up against a team in the Yankees that I thought you held your own, certainly being outmanned and outgunned, but they just had way more resources than you had, and even though I don't think the Yankees played a great series against the Royals, look at their lineup, and there are just so many minds all across that thing. The Royals really only had two bats that gave you any level of punch at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Royals, they need one of those guys to step up. I'm not disagreeing. It is a necessity to get Melendez be like the player they anticipated. Hunter Renfroe be the guy they thought they were signing. Like he was under expectation last year. Get Mikel Garcia to be more consistent. Because in the postseason, Garcia was good, but he was not good over the course of 162. That is obviously the goal. I still think when comparing to like the Yankees or someone, the Royals are outgunned, but I think the Royals looked at Cleveland and looked at Detroit and said, how are they doing it? They're not doing it with thumpers up and down the lineup. That's just not the economics of baseball. They're doing it by getting guys in and letting the getting guys on and then getting guys in. And the Royals decided, let's get another guy on. And it seems like Jonathan India is the plan. Whether it's a good or bad plan, time will tell. But that's clearly what the offseason goal was. Let's get guys on base. What's the quote from Moneyball? What does he do well? He gets on base.
Let me play one more cut from you guys from John Sherman, who met with the media probably about an hour or so ago. Here's John Sherman. He's talking about how the Royals, they have opportunities to put their stadium on both sides of the state line.
And then we have, you know, we have multiple opportunities on both sides of the state line. And it's just a process, I think. I feel really, really good about, I have empathy for people that feel like, you know, the process isn't clarified, but I feel really, really good about the process. I feel really, really good about the team that we've got on this, both internally and then the outside experts that we've hired. And I feel like we've got really a solid group of potential partners that are trying very hard to do something. And so this is a tough decision for us, but I think that. I don't think it's helpful to talk about things in this particular context before we're ready to kind of talk about something that's buttoned up.
I do think that this part of the conversation comes from this being such a new discussion for such a large number of us. It was never going to be easy to build a billion-dollar project in the middle of a metropolitan area. This is not a conversation that we've really had before, at least not in my lifetime, Rob, not in your lifetime. Every time we've talked about the stadiums, it has been to renovate where they already are. We're talking about changing the way that the metro works. We're talking about changing where people live. We're talking about changing the way that people commute. It was easy to have the conversation about the airport. They just were going to move the airport across the street. It was easy to have the conversation about the streetcar. They were just going to build the track on top of the street that people already drive on. No, they are talking about tearing things down and building a billion-dollar project on top of things. The conversation about the crossroads. Hey, these are places that people live now. These are places that people work. These are places that people have started businesses. I don't know if it was ever going to wrap up very neatly, whether it's on the Missouri side, whether it's on the Kansas side. We are talking about one of the largest things that have ever happened in the history of our city. So I understand why the process is taking maybe longer than people anticipated, because I don't think we really have a time frame of how long it takes to figure out where your NFL or Major League Baseball stadiums are going to go. There's not that many football stadiums in America. There's not that many baseball stadiums. There's a lot of cities. Not all of them got baseball teams. Think about what's happening right now with the Las Vegas A's. The Oakland A's have decided they're going to move. They still haven't figured out how they're paying for it. In Las Vegas, they have not figured it out. So these things just usually take a little bit of time. It has taken a long time. It has been basically a year without any real updates from the Royals about what they are going to do. I imagine we will get one at some point in 2025. And like you, I am hopeful that we get something concrete that we can move forward as a city and try to figure out where the Royals are going to play in the future. Because I think the Royals have made one thing clear. They are not playing in the Truman Sports Complex in the 2030s. They are not going to be there anymore. They have communicated that to us. We are moving at some point, and we were simply trying to figure out where that's going to be. We'll get back to baseball coming up at the top of the hour. Let's talk about some of the NFL rule changes that have come around. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into The Drive. We'll get back to baseball coming up at the top of the hour. We are about 24 hours away from the start of Royals baseball season. Rex Hudler is going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour. Our guy, Joel Goldberg, is going to be on the show in the 4 o'clock hour. So really excited to catch up with both of them to help get you ready for the start of baseball season. Let's talk a little football before then. A couple of potential rule changes. First off, the NFL Competition Committee is recommending that the dynamic kickoff rule is put in place permanently. They are also suggesting of moving touchbacks to the 35-yard line. Yes. I know that fans are always hesitant to change, and I know that there were a lot of questions about the kickoff rule. It worked. If you wanted more movement and more action and to make the kickoff relevant again, I think they did it last year. And if you are now going to add another layer of strategy into the game and put touchbacks on the 35-yard line, it is now going to force kickers to kick the ball in play. Now, yes, there will still be some touchbacks. And in certain scenarios, hey, we don't care about the extra 5 yards. Blast it out of the end zone, and we can live with it being on the 35-yard line because we don't want to risk the return. If anything, it creates strategy. That's what it does. It creates strategy. There was no strategy with the old kickoff. The kickers have gotten too good. They were simply kicking it out of the end zone, and the touchback was dead. I have my criticisms about the National Football League, but what I love about the league is they are willing to move off of something that doesn't work, and they don't keep things around solely for the idea, well, that's how we've always done it. Well, how you've always done something could potentially be wrong, and somebody has now come up with the better, more efficient way to do something. I give the NFL a lot of credit for adopting this kickoff rule. It was not their idea. They saw it work somewhere else. They tried it. It worked for them, and now they're making tinkers to it. This should be an example for a lot of business owners that keep doing something. It's not working anymore, but no, we're going to stick with it because that's what the consumer expects us to do. No, switch it up. You got to start going left. You got to come up with a new crossover. You've been doing that same crossover since 95. They ain't falling for it anymore. I give the NFL a lot of credit for this. Now, I say that on one end. Now, here's where I'm going to be critical. I will continue to be the only person that bangs this drum, and that's fine. I don't mind standing alone. They have to come up with something better than the onside kick. So the committee is also proposing that now you can just do an onside kick whenever you want as long as you are losing. Well, you've eliminated the surprise onside kick because we now have to tell the opposition that's what we're doing. Hey, Colts, we're down. We might try to catch you off guard here, but no, we're going to tell you that we're going to try to kick it here. It doesn't work. It does not work. The onside kick is broken. If you are not going to let them do the onside kick the old way, where the kicking team got a little bit of a running start and you basically had a 1 in 5 chance, a 1 in 4 chance of being able to recover it, you're wasting everybody's time. Football could be so much more exciting at the end of games. We all have watched a game in this scenario. A team is down 10 with 3 minutes to go, and you might as well turn it off. Because at that point, in order for the losing team to win, they then have to score a touchdown. They then have to make the extra point. They have to then make an onside kick that gives you a 2-3% chance of recovery. And then they have to score again. What if there was a way that could get you back to the 15, 20, 25% chance of keeping possession and could make the end of games more exciting? I don't care if I'm the only person that continues to say this. We need to get rid of the onside kick, and we seriously need to consider a 4th and 20, a 4th and 15 kind of play that would make the end of football games more exciting than I think they already are. And for the most part, they're pretty exciting. The league also wants to expand instant replay. This is the wrong direction to go. We should be pushing for less instant replay, not more of it. Because you and I both know that more instant replay is simply just more things for us to argue about. If they're going to continue to open the scope of what you can actually take a look at, you know what they're going to keep doing on CBS, on Fox, on Sunday Night Football? They're going to keep showing us plays in super slow-mo HD, and we're going to have more things to argue about and criticize the officials. Yes, I know you want them to get the calls right. I mean, they've been doing a bang-up job of it so far. With more technology than ever before, with more eyes on the game, with the box you can call up to New York. I mean, they have been doing, and we all think the NFL is doing a great job when it comes to officiating. Let's now give them more. Okay, all right. Yeah. Instant replay is bad. It's bad. It has caused more harm than good. We have gotten away from what the real intention of instant replay was. When we first had this idea, it was to change obvious and clear mistakes. And it had to be clear and conclusive evidence. That's not what we argue anymore with instant replay. It is now incredibly subjective. And now, by definition, led by human error. Because what I see and what you see sometimes are not the same. But they want to expand it for this season, so I'm sure we won't argue about it. I'm certain that there's going to be a Monday or Tuesday, week five of the NFL season, that the top story isn't going to be the actual games and the play. It's going to be the officiating again. Then we'll call up Mike Pereira. We'll have Dean Blandino on the show to then argue about the officials. So that's what the NFL wants to do. It doesn't sound like they're going to get rid of the tush push, and I'm for that. I don't think they should get rid of the tush push. I think they only want to get rid of the tush push because one team is better at than everywhere else, and that's not reason enough for me to vote against the play. You guys should either get better at running that version of the quarterback sneak, or you should get better at stopping it. One of the two.
I mean, me and you are on the same page. Replay assist expansion might be the worst idea I've ever seen proposed. Replay assist last year didn't help. The only time we ever heard about replay assist is when whoever was in the box, Pereira, Blandino, Sterator, they'd always be like, well, this is going to go to replay assist to expedite the process. I'm pretty sure the Xavier Worthy catch in the AFC title game was part of replay assist and expedited. It just less replay. I'm with you on onside kicks, although my one intrepidation with onside kicks is the officiating is bad in the NFL, and 4th and 20 could become a real problem because it could become a flagapalooza and become too much of a problem. But the system they have now of just no one has any chance of an onside kick is bad, but I don't know that opening up a play where officiating comes into play is better. But I am in favor of the idea of an onside kick fix. I just worry about the execution sometimes.
Yeah, and that's fine. We have enough football minds then. We have to figure out a better way, to give a losing team a chance at regaining possession. Because the onside kick is not a good opportunity anymore for you to get possession. And people always argue, well, in a basketball game, do you want to create 5-point shots? Well, we all watch the end of basketball games. The other team has to inbound it. You can then steal it. The other team has to make free throws. At the end of a game in basketball, you still have to make plays to go win the game. Just because you're up 5 with a minute 30 in a basketball game, yeah, you still got to keep making plays. At the end of a football game, you kind of don't have to make any plays anymore. You can sit back and prevent, let them go down the field, keep them in front of you, and then you just have to simply recover an onside kick in which, based on the numbers, you got a 98% chance of recovering, and then that ends the game. There is a more exciting way to end a football game than that, than I simply would like for them to find it. Let's get back to baseball coming up at the top of the hour. We got Rex Hudler joining the show in the 3 o'clock hour. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.